from the theme park capital of the world, bringing you the latest in theme park and pop culture news. Welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Thrill Geek Podcast. I'm Clint.
I'm Barry, and we're back to normal now. As normal as it can get.
It feels like it's been an eternity due to, you know, our year in review episode and our couple Tokyo episodes, which are doing quite well. Yeah. So we got a little bit of catching up to do as far as just kind of what we normally do. Our normal theme park news discussion. I was hoping it was going to be kind of slow while we were doing these special episodes, and it kind of was. There was a lot of stuff posted on the website, and I was going through it, and I was like, okay, we don't really need to talk about that. We don't need to talk about that. But we do have some stuff that we need to get caught up on.
Well, it's because we have another person writing for us now, Emily Ann, a.k.a. at Geek Notice, and on YouTube. She has a channel, Geek Notice, and she has been writing for us, and so all of a sudden, we've got articles on the website because it's not just me and you trying to do this.
Yeah, she's been a huge help. And I mentioned this last week when we were recording over at your place with Sin. We mentioned that she has come on board, and just she's been a godsend, and I can't thank her enough for what she's done. She's killing it with the articles. She's digging deep, and she's getting some stuff that I haven't even noticed that was news. So when she tells me she's got something to post, and I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that was announced. So she's absolutely killing it, and I can't thank her enough for everything she's doing. So yeah, and we will get her on the podcast. I just want to make sure we have her on for something that she would be interested in discussing. So
yeah, I mean, she'll be on in an upcoming episode,
and yeah,
maybe more. But and hey, I wrote two articles. When was the last time I did that?
I know you've been killing it too. No.
It's like
you've been busy with a lot of the Tokyo video work. So you know, it's
and there's still more to come. We're not done.
Yeah. So really quick, we're gonna just kind of talk about what we've been up to since. Pretty much since post Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, this past weekend, we both moved it, shaked it, and Mouska danced it at Magic Kingdom as the new Move It, Shake It, Mouska Dance It Street Party debuted. And I gotta say, as someone who didn't like Move It, Shake It, Dance It, this new one is really, really, really good. I for once, Disney has replaced something with a superior offering.
And it seems like that's the consensus across the board. I haven't really seen anything about it. I've seen a lot of people retweeting photos and videos of Mouska Dance It saying, I really like this. It's good. It's a good upgrade. Whereas that hasn't been said for previous incarnations of
Move It, Shake It.
So. Yeah.
I mean, they did the things that they did with the show, I think, that were smart. I think everybody loves Mickey and Minnie's birthday outfits. They're really cool. They're really retro. But also, and we're grown men talking about this. Also, they went retro with it from the style of the costumes for the dancers that are very sort of 1950s. / dapper type of outfits, going with more like retro songs, not trying to try too hard and do something super poppy. You have everything was an upgrade. You got live singers, you got two live singers, and you've got new characters, and you've got rare characters in this parade. I mean, for U.S. parks, the international parks use them a lot more, but Max is in the parade. Clarice is in the parade. The three Caballeros are in the parade. Clarabelle, Horace. I mean, you got a lot of the not often used characters. A lot of these characters you only see here at special events, if that. So
yeah. This one definitely had a different vibe to it, too, versus the other ones. I can almost say that I can almost find myself stopping and enjoying this one, whereas previous versions of Move It, Shake It, I would lose interest fairly quick, and it just became an afterthought to me.
The best part of the previous Move It, Shake It was the Vamos song at the end when it was leaving.
Yeah.
So that was about it.
And yeah, that's not talking bad about it. That was actually the best part of it.
That was the best part of the show. It's a fun, it's a fun thing. And yeah, it's definitely something that I will actually stop for now. And you know, unfortunately, like my wife Sin hasn't seen it yet. And I know she's going to instantly love this thing and want to stop and see it all the time. So yeah, I think universally, I haven't heard anyone who was disappointed with this. And that's good. It's always good to get something new here at Walt Disney World that is good and fun, and everyone seems to like it.
Because you don't hear that too often.
No, I mean, everybody's got their own opinions about stuff, but it's nice to see something that it replace. You know, yes, it's the same floats that got a new paint job and some new stuff on them, but it's an infinitely better show than the previous one. So.
It is. I agree completely. I enjoyed it, and they blast off little fuzzy pom poms in the air at the end, which is cool.
Yeah,
my kids love that. They were running around picking those up. So yeah, definitely an improvement. And Mickey and Minnie, like you said, are absolutely adorable in their confetti dress and suits. So,
yeah.
So, which we can mention really quick that we do have video of their meet and greet up. Thanks to Emily.
Yes,
on our YouTube page.
We have the meet and greet, and we also have the Move It, Shake It, Mouse Could Dance at Street Party up on the YouTube channel.
Which came out really nice, by the way, with our Osmo.
Yeah, it's not an easy show to shoot because you basically have to sort of run around and try to
walk around the whole hub.
Yeah, you pretty much have to walk around the whole hub, and it definitely looks really good with the Osmo. Also kicking off this weekend was for the third time the Epcot International Festival of the Arts.
Which I have not been to.
Yeah, which
so
to me, it's my favorite festival out of all of them since it's pretty much since its debut, it's become my favorite festival.
Yeah, I've gotten on Cheryl, and we're definitely making it out this year because it looks like a lot of fun. So we're gonna get out there. But especially the last few days, you've been out there trying some of the food. So what do you think so far?
You know, I love it because you know you get to see all this type of mostly Disney art. There's some non-Disney art there. You got artists actually creating art. You got the chalk art people who are creating chalk art every day. You've got performance artists on the fountain stage that today, for example, that I was there. The performance artists created a Goofy painting for in front of everybody. You got some of the local high schools performing. The big thing this year, the big change is the Disney on Broadway concert series is going to take place every single day. Which means they're bringing in a bunch of people who haven't performed at the festival before.
They did it only weekends previous years.
Yeah, the first year of the festival was only Friday through Mondays. And then last year they ran the festival every single day, but the concerts were still only Friday through Monday. Now the concerts are every day. So they're bringing in a bunch of new artists, and the way it's going to work for the most part is like the current artists. The two of them perform the first 2 days, and it's the next 2 days. It's alternating between 2 days performing back to back. So it's been really cool. I mean, you know, it kicked off with two people who've been here before, Kerry Butler and Kevin Massey. You know, Kevin was Tarzan on Broadway. Kerry was Belle on Broadway. And then the last 2 days have been Meredith Inglesby, who was in Beauty and the Beast, and Steve Blanchard, who was Beast on Broadway for 8 years, and Gaston for almost two. So they're new this year, and so there's going to be a lot of different Disney on Broadway songs sung this year. They're bringing in the original Aladdin and Jasmine. from the Broadway show.
Didn't you mention something about a Mary Poppins or something?
Yeah, well, Ashley Brown, and who's the original Mary Poppins, is back again. Gavin Lee, who's the original Bert, is coming this year. And then I can't remember some of the other people. I know one of the other artists was Ursula in The Little Mermaid on Broadway. And then, and like I said, some of the people who've been here before are back, and then it'll culminate on the 25th, the final day of the festival, where there'll be a special night, the final night, where there'll be four performers all on the stage at the same time. So
that's cool.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. It'll be Ashley Brown, you know, who was Mary Poppins, Ted Strickland, who was Tarzan on Broadway, Kissy Simmons, who was Nala in The Lion King, and then Alton Fitzgerald White, who was Mufasa on Broadway and The Lion King. So
now, how long do these performances, is it vary between the person, or are they, how long does each performance usually run?
It's a 30-minute show.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw today, I mentioned Meredith Inglesby and Steve Blanchard, and they basically began the show with a medley of songs from Beauty and the Beast, and then they did a song from Frozen from the Broadway show, not one of the film songs, one of the Broadway show songs, and then they were also in Newsies, and they did a medley of Newsies songs to end the show. So this year is going to be interesting with it being 7 days a week and new performers. There's going to be a lot of different Disney Broadway songs performed this year, which, I mean, normally you get to see Broadway performers. These, you know, that's not something you often get to see without paying a nice ticket for, so...
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things I've always said about, you know, people that complain about theme park tickets. You know, if you go during this festival, you're basically going to get a miniature...
You're getting a mini concert.
Broadway performance, yeah. So, hey, that's awesome.
And, of course, the food's back. You know, you can't have an Epcot festival without food. One of the things that makes the Festival of the Arts different is the food's a little higher end. Stuff is plated properly. It's not just put in like a cardboard dish. Everything's actually plated a certain way. So yeah. I tried the lobster chips, which are basically fresh cooked chips with lobster and a couple other sauces on it. It was very good. That's probably my favorite thing so far I've tried. I tried the deconstructed BLT because there's one booth called Deconstructed Dish, which
that's what that is. I'm like, what are all these deconstructed dishes everybody's posting on Twitter?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, it's basically a BLT deconstructed, and it's like pork belly, a poached egg, tomato jam, I think it's like a lettuce. Some sort of lettuce cream or something like that. That was really good. Everything I've tried so far at the festival has been pretty good. And we will have a upcoming video on YouTube that'll have me, Sin, Emily trying stuff and checking out stuff at the Festival of the Arts.
How was that funnel cake you posted today?
That was probably the weakest thing I've tried so far.
Salted caramel funnel cake.
Yeah, I mean, it tasted good, and it may have been, in fact, the funnel cake wasn't completely fresh. I think it may have been sitting there for a little bit.
Yeah.
So it wasn't fully.
That never helps.
No. Funnel cake needs to come fresh out of the fryer. So
nice and hot.
Nice and hot. I mean, it was warm, but yeah, it doesn't take long for like that dough to like start to harden a little bit. If it's not fresh out of the fryer, but I like the taste, so it's like I said, you can't go wrong with the food. Usually, almost everything at the Festival of Arts, it's all good. It's a little bit pricier than some of the other festivals, food wise, but you're paying for the presentation and higher end ingredients too. So
cool. Maybe we could dive into a little bit more once I get out there and check it out. But we're definitely aiming to get out there and check out Festival of the Arts this year with the kids and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a bunch of other stuff we need to... there's a bunch of other new stuff that debuted this weekend with The Incredibles. Mike and Sully came back in a new meet and greet. And there's also another new dance party over at Animal Kingdom. And there's the new thing at Magic Kingdom where in Town Square every day there's going to be different characters coming out for meet and greets. I mean, so far they've had Phineas and Ferb. Judy and Nick from Zootopia. They've had two characters from Chicken Little. They had Robin Hood and Little John. So every day there's going to be a different characters meeting, which, hey, that's something other parks do. What an idea. So
let's bring it back for a limited. Let's bring it here for a limited time.
Yeah. How about we bring it permanently? So
that would be nice. All right, let's spend some time talking about Galaxy's Edge, because it seems like every week now there's something new in relation to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge.
Well, we got a month for the Disneyland one, and that's June.
Apparently, according to Iger, we got a June opening date for Disneyland's version. So,
that sounds about right. I mean, there's some people who, you know, they had always said summer 2019, so that, you know, that could mean anywhere from end of June to, you know, September. So, but looks like June is the time. And things must be done because, you know, they've released some videos for each attraction, and some of that footage was shot inside the attraction.
We got more video of Smuggler's Run, the Millennium Falcon ride, some actual POV footage of the ride, and there's been all sorts of articles bouncing around that saying that
For Rise of the Resistance, the main ride. I know a lot of people think, oh, Millennium Falcon, but no, the main ride is Rise of the Resistance. And yeah, there's been some articles that your entire experience, and this doesn't just include the ride. This includes, from what I've heard, there's at least two pre-shows before you get on the ride, and then there's a little something after you get off the ride. That it's a full 28-minute experience, which wouldn't surprise me, because everything, you know, rumor wise we've heard about this ride, it is very ambitious. Trying for something that they've never done, to immerse you in a ride the way it has never been done before.
Yeah, and I read that rumor article about the ride being the whole experience being 29 minutes long, and apparently there's parts where you're actually going to be getting off the ride vehicle and getting onto another ride vehicle or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of back and forth about exactly what.
Yeah,
and I think that there's a whole thing about you being put onto a transport. You get onto a transport.
That's the thing I read.
Yeah, and then the spoilers for everyone out there. If you don't want to hear us talk about this, then skip. and then your transport gets attacked by the First Order, and then your prisoners.
You're captured.
You're captured. And when you step off that transport, you step into this gigantic hangar.
Yeah.
And then you are sent to be processed, which begins the next pre-show part. So we're talking multiple stages before you even get onto the ride.
And then we got more kind of this article that Barron's posted. I posted kind of snippets of it on ThrillGeek, but this website, Barron's, they posted an interesting article showing more details about, did we ever figure out if it was Oga's Cantina, Uga's?
I think so.
I know they've said it, but I can't remember. Anyways, and we found out that Blue Milk will be part of it as well. Guests will be able to try Blue Milk.
What Blue Milk will be, we'll see.
Yeah. I think it said, let me see here on the article. The article said it will be a, quote, non-dairy drink. And it was unclear whether it will be sold in Oga's or in the outdoor marketplace or both. I just hope you don't have to be like Luke in The Last Jedi and milk it yourself out of one of those. Of course, that's blue milk that he drinks. My Star Wars milk knowledge is not up to par. But then there was more details in the article about the marketplace area. There's going to be bartering. There's going to be an animatronic person that's going to be kind of the barterer, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see operationally wise how much of this gets pulled off. I mean, I have high hopes, and I hope everything that they've thought of actually works. I'm going to be interested to see how, you know, we know when Wizarding World opened, they limited the amount of people who could get into Hogsmeade at a time. And I'm going to be interested to see what they do crowd control wise with Galaxy's Edge, because if there's too many people in there, you know, I'm sure it's built to handle a certain amount of people, but if there's too many people, all this storytelling is going to go right out the window.
Yeah, you know, that's been a fear that's always been in the back of my head. You know, all this stuff sounds great, but we know the crowds that this thing is going to draw in. We know the crowds are going to be insane. So,
and combine that here for Disney World with, not to be mean, but our operations here who love to just, if they don't want to deal with it, they just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Whereas Disneyland doesn't do stuff. Disneyland, you know, especially dealing with that local base there, they're a lot more careful about getting rid of certain things and it's going to be interesting to see how well this all works operationally from the storytelling, having, you know, characters out with the crowds, and you know, with the Millennium Falcon, with how much control you're going to have over it.
Yeah, that was the other thing, is we got that there was that article floating around that the Millennium Falcon's going to have 200 buttons for you to press or something.
Yeah, but only, only a certain amount are actually functional part of the ride. So,
and there was actually a cast member, the Disneyland cast member magazine, Ryan, actually, who just I let him shack here at the house for a few days. He bought me a copy of it, and I was looking through it. And there's one picture of the inside of the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And there's there's a handful of buttons that are lit up like bright green.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I bet you those are the buttons you're going to be able to push that are actually, it's like Mission Space. You got the two buttons there in front of you.
Yeah.
And you have consoles of buttons around you that do maybe make a sound effect or something.
Well, yeah, in the Millennium Falcon in the movie, there's tons of switches and buttons all in the cockpit. So, I mean,
I just hope I forgot what movie it was, but there's one scene in one of the original movies. Maybe you know this, where Han Solo like walks into the cockpit and he hits the wall and it like turns on. I was like, can I please be able to do that? Just like walk in and like punch the wall and the whole console lights up. But yeah, you know, they're saying there's all these buttons and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, there's going to be probably hundreds of buttons for you to push, allegedly. But there's only going to be four or five that actually do something.
And it's going to be interesting with you know, the cast members in Rise of the Resistance. I mean, there's, from what, you know, some of the rumors and things we've read, they're supposed to be like in character,
like in the movie, yeah.
In like First Order, you know, costumes.
Yeah.
So it's
all
it's,
this, all this stuff just it sounds too good to be true.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like I said, if they pull, you know, like we've said on here before, the majority of the team Imagineers who are working on Rise of Resistance were the ones who created Pirates of the Caribbean in Shanghai.
Yeah.
And from the beginning, the goal has been to top what was done in Shanghai. Everything that's been said about this is one of the most technologically impressive rides Disney has ever created. That they've never done anything like this before.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm being optimistic about some of these things that they're talking about, and like you said, how long they're going to last.
I'm excited, but I don't want to get too excited because I don't want to walk at being someone who's been a Star Wars fan since he's 6 years old. I don't want to get disappointed. But
exactly,
everything so far sounds amazing. So.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like all the time we're getting new information about Galaxy, new little snidbits. There's new comic books coming out that are going to allow you to dive into the Black Spire outpost on Batu. You know, Disney's really embracing this whole universe and going out on all these limbs on creating ways for people to get. To build up the hype with the Galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of stuff that's been in the Star Wars. If you're a fan of Star Wars, it's always been there. There's always been the novels that sort of expand the story.
Yeah.
And the whole comic books and everything and the other stories, you know, are helping to expand everything that's everything behind this new area, which is considered an official part of the Star Wars universe. So
yeah. So all right, let's go to your favorite place.
Tokyo Disney.
They've announced some new things, one of which was probably at least in my recent memory, one of the most popular articles on Thrill Geek. The Kingdom Hearts hotel rooms coming to the area. This was interesting. They're taking rooms from their excuse me, I don't have the
Disney Ambassador. I wouldn't say moderate. But it's below the Disneyland Hotel and the MiraCosta, so it's.
And this is one of the on-site resorts that's right there near.
Yeah,
the park.
It's near the parks. It's near their downtown Disney area.
But these Kingdom Hearts room, basically, it looks like they're just taking standard rooms of the hotels and just kind of overlaying it with Kingdom Hearts artwork. There's going to be a special room key that can actually be used. That's in the shape of a keyblade that can be used to access the room. Yeah. You're going to get two special postcards, Kingdom Hearts postcards. And then, like I said, there's a bunch of Kingdom Hearts themed artwork on the walls.
Artwork, linens.
Yeah, even I think that was the coolest part for me, were the bed linens.
Yeah.
And then I thought at first you weren't going to be able to. Apparently, when you check out, they give you a souvenir keyblade. Because I read, after I finished the article, I read somewhere that you weren't able to keep the keyblade hotel key, which I don't think you are. I think you turn that in, and they're going to give you like a little keepsake keyblade. But the rooms are going to be available March 26th to June 30th. So if you're going to Tokyo Disney in that time frame. And reservations open up here in like 9 days, January 30th.
And I'm sure those will sell out pretty
sell out quick.
Fast.
Yeah, and the price is 46,000 yen, which comes out to about $430 a night.
Yeah.
That's expensive.
Yeah, that's a little bit on the higher end for that hotel. A lot of times you can get that one for around $300 a night, depending on how far in advance and time of year. Also coming to Tokyo Disney, this one is coming to Tokyo Disney Sea. They have a new stage show, Song of Mirage, coming to the hangar stage, which is in the Lost River Delta section of the park. That's where Indiana Jones and Raging Spirits is. That will kick off July 23rd, 2019. And it's a brand new show starring your favorite Disney characters like Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, Donald Duck, Goofy, and an original story created just for the parks, the park there. And looks like they'll go on an adventure to seek out Rio Dorado, which is Spanish for Golden River, and its legendary city of gold. So,
yeah, the artwork's really cute. Like, they're all in like safari, like jungle outfits.
Mm-hmm. And so that'll be a new show coming in. The big thing new for 2019 at Tokyo DisneySea, and opening the same day as that show, is their version of Soarin', which is Soarin' Fantastic Flight. And once again, as I pointed out in the entire Disney social media universe immediately agreed with in all levels, is once again Tokyo is getting a better version of what we have here.
And they're spelling it Soaring with a G.
Yes.
They're spelling it correctly. We can't spell over here stateside. Yeah,
Soarin' with an apostrophe. But it's going into the Mediterranean Harbor section of the park. Really, it's up on the walkway as you walk up to Mount Prometheus. So it's going in. It's basically creating a new area of Mediterranean Harbor. And I guess the hills, that's where, as the description says, it's nestled in the hills of Mediterranean Harbor amidst the backdrop of the old world Italian village is the Museum of Fantastic Flight. And it's obviously dedicated to humankind's enduring dream of flying. The museum is celebrating Camilla Falco, a visionary inventor of the fledgling field of aviation, and a special retrospective of her life. This place looks pretty beautiful. Obviously, with it being in the Mediterranean Harbor, it matches the Italian style of the Mediterranean Harbor. So, I mean, the outside of this building is very well themed.
Yeah.
Unlike the other Soarin' locations in the United States. And then the some of the inside the courtyard, and then the actual inside of the queue, some of the concept art. This thing looks pretty impressive, and
it almost has like a steampunk look to it.
Yeah, it does have sort of a steampunk late 19th early 20th century look. You tour the museum, that's going to be part of the queue, and then it includes a magical visit from the spirit of Camilla, and then which will culminate with guest boarding her latest greatest achievement, a flying vehicle of her own design called the Dream Flyer, where guests will experience what Camilla believed that our imagination could propel us into the future and take us everywhere we wish to go. The interesting thing is while it will share a lot of the pieces of Soarin' around the world, which, is here, California, and Shanghai, it will have its own unique parts exclusive to that park. I know, shocking.
But this is, like you just mentioned, this is going to be pretty much a Soarin' ride platform. The hangar seats and the giant screen.
What's interesting is based on like the attraction poster and another piece of concept art, I have a feeling while it's the same ride vehicles, they're going to be themed to look different than the ones we have here.
Yeah, that's where I was kind of getting the steampunk vibe from, where the ride vehicles, because they kind of have like this mechanicalized
steampunk slash Da Vinci too, sort of a Da Vinci look to them.
Yeah, they look really interesting.
Yeah, so they'll get they will get some of their own, some unique content as part of that. And the interesting thing is they didn't state in it, but whether Camilla Falco will turn out to be a member of SEA, aka the Society of Explorers and Adventurers, which is you know, the secret society the Imagineers came up to that has been used in various attractions and throughout all the Disney parks. So
interesting. I didn't know about that.
It'll be interesting to see if she's part of that. You got to imagine she might be. So,
I mean, I would imagine because it's not really it's a unique attraction. So it'd be a perfect opportunity for them to put, for them to put a character like that into it.
Yeah. So, and that does open July 23rd, 2019. So,
that's it for Tokyo stuff, right?
Yeah.
As far as new stuff.
Yeah.
And then
the
also
United
we
States.
You sound so thrilled.
Yes.
And as we got tons of Tokyo stuff, which we've talked about in previous episodes and everything. So be sure to check out our YouTube channel for all of Barry's Tokyo Disney videos. He's worked hard on them. There's a lot of good stuff up there.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff up there, and we still got a few more left that will be coming within the next week or two here of including one thing I know everyone's been asking for. Albeit they were a part of our vlogs of our days at Tokyo Disney, we will have separate videos of just us eating snacks and food at Tokyo Disneyland and Tokyo DisneySea. But yeah, there's a few more videos left coming from Tokyo. So moving on to, I guess, Universal.
Yeah, we got some catching up to do. I don't know. I was asking Barry if we had this past month has pretty much been a blur to both me and him. I'll talk about this really quick because if we did talk about it, I don't want to spend too much time talking about it.
I don't think we did because it happened December 19th. So
and we didn't record an episode on Christmas Day week.
And I think the reason it happened December 19th is because there was an accidental leak. Wasn't it like a week before, I believe?
Yeah, I remember that now. But anyways, we got a Halloween Horror Nights dates for Halloween Horror Nights 29. It's starting a week earlier this year thanks to Rock the Universe happening in about just over a week. They moved Rock the Universe to the beginning of February, which normally takes in the middle of September.
Yeah.
And due to this, we're getting an extra week of Halloween Horror Nights, which now starts September 6th this year, so I'm not complaining at all.
No, I mean, for those of you who've listened here before, God, you know we talk about Halloween Horror Nights so much.
Religiously.
I've been told we talk sometimes too much about Halloween Horror Nights, but this has been, ever since Rock the Universe has been moved, this has been speculated. Our question had always been, is it going to be a Labor Day weekend, or are they going to wait till the weekend after Labor Day? And now we know it will be Friday, September 6th, the Friday after Labor Day. You know, some people, I know there's some of the longtime fans who like, and I always find this funny. It's almost like hipsters and like, if a band becomes too big, then I don't like them anymore. Mm-hmm. This event has just, in the last 5 years alone, this event has really grown dramatically. I feel since 25, it's really kept each year, it's gotten bigger and bigger. And then this year, past year, with Stranger Things, you had people coming to Halloween Horror Nights, so many people who had never been before. And they kept adding more dates, and even those dates that they added were packed. And we, you know, once Rock the Universe was moved, we knew this was coming, and it made sense. You know, some people, you know, no different than last year when Disney started the Halloween parties in the middle of August.
Yep.
There was a demand for it, and it makes sense. You know, I mean, we're getting what I'm assuming probably that first weekend will be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The interesting thing will be the following week, if whether or not they will do Thursday or not, or just keep it Friday, Saturday, Sunday again. I have a feeling it'll depend on demand.
I just feel sorry for the scare actors. That's almost 2 months of Halloween Horror Nights now.
if anything, that's the one thing I've worried about with the event getting so big, is just the wear and tear on the scare actors. We saw quite a few nights last year where, at least from what we know, from people we know who work the event, where they had to pull people off the streets.
Yeah.
To fill in the houses, because there just wasn't enough people. You know, there was definitely a few nights, especially the nights they added on, where there a lot of the streets did not have as many, a lot of the scare zones didn't have as many people on them as there normally is. I just think, you know, they're just gonna have to do, you know, there's just gonna be more reserves than there ever has been before, because, you know, it's very hard to make it all the way through that event.
It is. And like I was going to say, I've worked Halloween Horror Nights. I've been a scare actor. I know how, I know how hard it is on your body. So for now it to be, you know, I mean, given it's only a few days.
We definitely saw, you know, some of the people we know who are scare actors. We definitely know that some of them, whether it was set up that way or not, but they definitely, I felt like some of the people we knew, they took a couple more days off, especially the last few weeks normally than what they used to do.
Yeah.
Just because of the wear and tear. You know, so it's, you know, I don't envy the people who are going to have to schedule this and figure this out, because we're in a new era now for scare actors. It's, you know, you're probably talking, what, the last 5 weeks, five, six, maybe 5 weeks of the event now is probably going to be Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was saying with, you know, at first it's just going to be, you know, Friday, Saturday. And then, like you said, we don't know if they're going to go to Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
It'll all be on the depend on the demand. Obviously, we don't have any houses yet, but, you know, barring some falling out, we expect Stranger Things back with season two being the focal point. Season three coming out this summer, you know, the Stranger Things phenomena is not going to let up. And if anything, having season three coming out this summer is going to put it even more back into everybody's heads. So,
yeah, there's no doubt that Stranger Things is going to be the new Walking Dead here, at least for the next couple years, due to the insane crowds it brought in last year, which I'm okay with. Halloween Horror Nights does well. That means, you know, it's not a bad thing. Yes, the crowds are insane, but at least with us locals, you know, we can go and enjoy it at our leisure. So, and speaking of dates being announced, we got Mardi Gras. We got some new Mardi Gras details, which actually starts here in what, about?
Kicks off February 9th, so we're a couple weeks away here. You know, they announced most of the concert lineup except for three nights. The concert lineup this year, it's a lot of returning people. There's some new artists that are going to be here this year.
Yeah, I'll quick plow through them here. Why not?
Go ahead.
Saturday, February 9th, Bush. February 16th, Gavin DeGraw. February 17th, Dan and Shay. February 23rd, Macklemore. March 9th, Becky G. March 10th, Mr. Worldwide, Sean Paul.
That was Pitbull.
That's Pitbull. I'm getting my...
But no, Sean Paul is like, he's on like every other... He's on a ton of songs. We saw him last time, and it's like...
Yeah.
His concert basically is him, his band, playing the other songs that he's on for the most part, and then he drops his rap, and then...
That's it.
That's it, yeah.
March 16th, Steve Miller Band. March 17th, Ziggy Marley. March 23rd, NF, and then March 24th, Mr. Worldwide, Pitbull.
Pitbull, yeah.
Then 30th and 31st are to be announced, and there's still a couple more before that. that need to be announced.
Sunday, March 24th, it will be a madhouse.
And then we got some new concept artwork for the floats, which are going to be, quote, party animal themed this year. Yeah. We're getting six new floats featuring the Arctic, the jungle, the ocean. Some really cool concept artwork was posted, which we have up on the website.
All of these look really neat.
Yeah, there's like an Arctic one with penguins and a walrus and a polar bear, kind of like a New Orleans type theme one, like an alligator swamp one with gators and crawfish and frogs. What else? Oh, the sea turtle one, the underwater one, like a treasure chest. That one looks really cool. And then we got a few details about food. They just said that it'll feature beignets, frog legs, crawfish, and
we'll see if they ended up coming up with anything new this year food wise because they shocked us in the holidays dropping a bunch of holiday food that they hadn't done before. So it'll be interesting to see if we see anything new food wise. And then, you know, the big thing, you know, Mardi Gras is big for the pass holders, and they've released one of the biggest perks is being able to sign up to try to get on a float. And a lot of the nights are already filled up for pass holders. And of course you get the exclusive viewing area located near Mel's Drive-In. We get the City Walk Club access, which is nice. If you ever want to check out City Walk during Mardi Gras, it's the time to do it because you don't have to pay for it. You get 10, depending on which, with the Premier or Preferred to get 10% off the Mardi Gras food tents, Premier get 15% off. And they've been doing the Universal Annual Pass Holder buttons every month. And for February, you'll be able to get a gator, and based on the gator float.
Yeah. It's always a fun time. You know, me and you have done it. It's always a fun time getting on the
riding Mardi Gras floats. Riding the float is the best thing about Mardi Gras.
It really is. It's always a blast getting on there and tossing beads out to people and having a good time.
So. Yeah, we always try to get to do that as many times as we can during Mardi Gras because that to me is the most fun. So.
So really quick before we dive into your little segment here, we're going to talk about this Jurassic Park construction that's been going on. Well, it's not really construction yet, I should say. There's walls up in quotations. Jurassic Park. Yeah. Disclaimer, this is all rumor, speculation, just to cover our butts. But there are construction walls up in Jurassic Park right now around the outsides of the, basically the edges of the Discovery Center, preventing you from getting down by the water on the, I guess you could say the backside, front side of the Discovery Center.
Yeah.
The current rumor is that a roller coaster will be going in that area probably 2021. The rumor is a very tight-knit launched coaster. Mm-hmm. For you coaster enthusiasts, it's rumored to be similar to Terran out in Germany, a very tight turn, very tight quarters coaster with launches and apparently some Jurassic. This is the thing, is nobody knows if it's going to be the back and forth between whether we're getting Jurassic World, because we all know Universal Studios Hollywood is getting Jurassic World, the whole makeover. But they don't have a Jurassic Park section, so to speak,
yeah,
as involved as ours. My personal opinion, and I don't think that it's going to be... I don't think we're getting Jurassic World over here just to keep it distinct to Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean the rumor has been that, you know, Jurassic World is part of the potential new park that'll be built even though to me it really makes no sense. Why would you have two Jurassic Lands? But on the other hand, Blue is in the Jurassic Park section, so you know that thematic idea went out the window anyway.
Yeah, that is true. We have Blue in the Raptor Encounter, which is also when this supposed rumored roller coaster construction starts. They're going to be,
they're taking out the games.
Yeah, that's the other thing that has construction walls up around it are the Midway games in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, they're taking out the games, moving the Raptor Encounter there.
So there's just all sorts of insanity going on right now with these rumors, speculation.
Yeah, I mean, you got that. You got the fact that the we heard the bypass bridge is going to be closed.
Yeah, I saw there was some team member chatter that the bypass bridge, which is normally used for Universal team members to go across. But it does open periodically to guests during really busy times.
Busy times, yeah.
That connects Lost Continent to Jurassic Park will be closing.
And then there's the issue, you know, we saw what may possibly be the layout.
I think
channel WKMG, channel 6 here.
No, I think it was Channel 9.
Well, maybe it was Channel 9.
Channel 9, Channel 6, one of the big news
stations. One of the local TV stations. And then once we saw that rumored layout, then there's the issue of sightline issues with Hogsmeade, which is definitely something that they have to be careful about because there are very strict rules they have to follow when it comes to Harry Potter.
Yeah, and that bypass bridge goes really close to Hogsmeade, and apparently that layout that they discovered, it goes
pretty close
to Hogsmeade. So,
there's a question of how close it goes. It goes to Hogsmeade, or whether it's closer to the back of Mythos. You know, it definitely does play with the water, which is one of the rumors we had heard, we had known anyway about that coaster, that there would be definitely some running along the water.
The one thing I'm bummed about is losing that back area back behind the Discovery Center, because I love that area back there. It's just such a peaceful area of the park. I'm kind of bummed that we're losing that area, but we're getting apparently a rumored roller coaster. So I can't complain too much.
And we'll see. We will definitely start seeing some stuff soon since they've put up walls and based on the timeline and based on what we've thought, you know, there's part of that coaster is going to be built. The part behind the Discovery Center and back there is probably going to be built first before they get to the part where they have, where we're assuming they're going to build it over Camp Jurassic. So we expect like one section of the coaster to be finished before they finish the other half, which will require them to shut down a huge chunk of Jurassic Park.
Yeah. That won't be until, like I said, at least 2021, because you think about it, we got the Harry Potter coaster this year. Next year, probably the Terminator 2 replacement.
Yeah.
And then 2021 will be supposedly whatever this is going to be. So,
and who knows? It's Universal. Like I said, they keep their the cards close to their vest, and I mean, who knows? There could be another something else in the offering, and people, they built Transformers in less than a year, so
they
want to build it. Unlike Disney, they will build something fast when they want to. So
yeah, so that's kind of. Everybody's been talking about this Jurassic Park, the minute these construct, there's been hearsay before the construction walls went up that this was going to happen. But once the construction walls went up, the rubber hit the road and everybody's talking about it. So, again, this is all rumor speculation. But apparently it is, rumored that a roller coaster is coming to, Jurassic Park / World. We'll see what happens with that. So, all right, really quick, Barry is going to be going through, we've been doing all theme park stuff, and usually we do a little bit of pop culture stuff.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of pop culture stuff. Probably the biggest thing was the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer finally coming out. You know, it was originally supposed, rumored to have come out December, but I guess they decided to give the Avengers Infinity War trailer and the Captain Marvel trailer a little bit more room to breathe before dropping the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer. And I liked it. I love some of the people who are like, well, I guess he survives Avengers Endgame. It's like, duh, no crap. We know he's going to survive.
Yeah. And there were some people that were confused.
The interesting thing to me is, you know, whatever happens in Endgame, will he remember what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Will he know that he had died?
There was a lot of, I saw somebody discussing that about, you know him remembering
if they fix everything, who are going to be the ones out of, not to go off on a tangent here, but who are going to be the ones out of the Avengers who remember what happened? So,
yeah, because you got this whole time thing with Doctor Strange and going back in time. That's probably going to,
yeah, because what we see in this trailer, just he's Peter Parker. They're going on a class trip to Europe, you know,
yeah.
and he, and apparently, he's been doing, Aunt May, I guess, is apparently on board with him being Spider-Man. So,
and can we talk about Mysterio and Jake Gyllenhaal? How amazing he looks!
Oh yeah, I mean that looked great, and they've kept pretty quiet about what that whole storyline's going to be, but it looks to me that he's pretending to be a superhero.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is Mysterio able to he was like a special effects man in the movie industry, So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But what they did show of that looked really cool. Having him in, they've done very smart with the new Spider-Man movies of taking him. I knew Spider-Man and New York are synonymous with each other, and I think they're working to that point. But taking him out of his element and giving us something different, which has been, I think, the key to one of the reasons everyone's been so on board with the new Spider-Man stuff. And, they're putting him in Europe, and Nick Fury shows up, and he's going to have to eventually, move a little bit more further on, and obviously things begin to happen between him and MJ, and I love the tag at the end there.
When he's like, I like Spider-Man. He's such a cool dude. And then he's like,
what's up, dickwad?
Yeah. And he's like, what's up? No, that was pretty funny. Going back to Mysterio, his costume looked great. I was shocked at how true and genuine he looked
to the comics.
Because with all these comic book movies coming out, sometimes they veer so off course with the comic book costumes. And I get it. They have to do it to make it look,
Marvel has done... Yeah, but Marvel's done a good job with sticking pretty close.
Yeah, I could say Marvel, for the most part, has done a pretty good job with sticking close to their comic book alternative.
Yeah.
And Mysterio's no different. I was glad to see the fishbowl head helmet, which was really cool. So it looks good. I'm excited. I think was there anything else? I know like I said, these past few weeks have been such a blur with trailers, and we've gotten few little trailers. We got a Pikachu one during the big game yesterday, which, by the way, go Patriots.
That's the whole reason we're late, by the way.
Yeah, sorry.
Sports ball. It's all sports ball's fault.
Yeah. Game was a little bit late last night. We were going to record last night, so that's why this episode.
I should say that's Clint's fault. I could have given two craps, but...
Yeah. All right, let's dive into your. I'm terrible at this, so this is going to be a Barry thing.
I mean, we did a top theme park stories of 2018. Theme park news, theme park things, period of 2018. So, the plan was to do also a TV and a movie one, but since Clint has children.
And that was the other thing too, you know. I don't have the sustenance to come up with this list.
The irony though is because of Thrill Geek, I definitely do not watch as much TV and movies as I used to. So that is also your fault.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we talk pop culture, so why not talk about, you know, our top TV and movies of 2018. And I'll be brief. Top TV. This one was a little bit harder to come up with movies, obviously, because I watch a lot more TV shows. It's funny in the world we live in now. We're in many ways, you know, TV occupies this place where. That's where the best stories are now.
Yeah.
You know, is television. You know, outside of, you know, big giant budget movies, and there's still the dramatic movies and comedies. TV is where real storytelling is at now. So my top five TV shows of 2018 for me. And let me put this in, that these are for me.
And when you say TV, you mean like streaming, like Netflix.
Streaming, yeah, everything's TV now.
Everything, I mean, yeah.
You know, whether you watch it on your phone or your tablet or your laptop or your smart TV. I mean, what else are we going to call it? Yeah.
Streaming, top five streaming shows.
A lot of them are streaming services, but
Number
five for me is the comedy on NBC, The Good Place. I love this show. It's unlike anything else on network television.
A lot of my other friends watch that. I may have to.
It's funny, but it's where is there a TV show where not only is it a comedy, but it also makes you think about life. So it's from the creators of Parks and Recreation, which is one of my favorite TV shows. Number five is The Good Place. Number four for me is a show on Netflix called The End of the, I'm going to say, Effing World. this was a show that sort of came out of nowhere. It's from the UK, and it's basically about this 17-year-old kid who... is a psychopath, and he's plotting to do his first murder when this new girl who he's thinking about killing sort of catches him off guard, and then they end up going on this crazy adventure. So
interesting. I haven't heard about this show at all, so I'm intrigued.
It's definitely different, but really it's a really good show. And the ending is definitely interesting. So that's number four. Number three for me is for 2018 is the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. You know, sort of that and the haunting? What was the one you guys watched?
The Haunting of Hill House.
Yes, those sort of both came out at the same time, and I haven't watched Haunting of Hill House, but I did watch Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And so this is one that's really gotten sort of mixed with some people, but I really liked it. I mean, it's funny, it's dark, it's sometimes campy. This is not your old Sabrina. This is a very... unique world, and just the fact that to see there's a moment in that show where her aunts say a certain thing that every time they said it, I would laugh my ass off. Because, you know, I don't want to give it away, but people who watch show, they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, loved it. You know, the first half of season one has come out. I believe the second part of season one comes out in April, I think, on Netflix. So where am I at? Is that number three? Yeah, that was number three.
That was number three, yeah.
Number two is DuckTales on the Disney Channel.
Really?
That's kind yes, of... yes, really. Let me tell you why.
I wasn't expecting that, but okay.
I love the reboot of DuckTales. One of the things that really makes it different is there's a continuing storyline.
Yeah.
Yes. Each episode, you know, is self-contained, but throughout, they just started season two in September, but season one started the previous year, but ran into this year. Throughout season one, there was an entire arc involving Magic of Dispel and involving Huey, Dewey, and Louie finding out what happened to their mom. That went through the whole season, culminating into the season finale, and it was some of my favorite television of 2018. The third to last episode of season one is one of the most heartbreaking episodes of TV I've ever seen, as you find out what happened to Huey, Dewey, and Louie's mom, and why, like at the beginning of the new DuckTales, why Scrooge and Donald haven't spoken to each other in 10 years.
Oh, wow.
So it's, I cannot recommend it enough. It's one of the rare shows that I have watched the episodes multiple times.
Yeah.
And enjoy watching them again and again. It's that good. And season two has started. It's already been renewed for season three. It's one of my favorite shows on television.
Hmm. Interesting.
Number one is on Amazon Prime Video, and it's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It's from the creator of the Gilmore Girls, and it's basically about this married woman in the 1950s who one day her husband up and decides that doesn't want to be married anymore, and she, after helping support his, you know, amateur stand-up career, she ends up going up on stage drunk after this all happens, and turns out to be very, very funny. And it's basically about her, you know, going through this divorce in 1959 and 58-59, and also becoming this stand-up comedian, which is not very commonplace at that time. There were not a lot of female comedians.
Okay, I remember this show now. Yeah. Okay.
It's really, really, really good.
They played the trailer for this in movie theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, season two came out this year, and it's just as good as the first season, and I cannot recommend it enough. I mean, and that's my top five. It's the shocking thing is some of my favorite shows of the previous year or so aren't on that. Like, as much as I love Westworld, season two wasn't as good as season one. As much as I liked Handmaid's Tale, season two was very disappointing to me.
I was gonna say, aren't you a big hand? Because I know Cheryl loves that show.
I really like it, but season two, the first season was really, really well done. I mean, it is one of the darkest shows on television.
Yeah.
But season two was just pissed me off at times, but not in a good way. Like, you know, not like in a, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. Holy crap, pissed off. More like, oh my God, why is this character making this dumb decision? So
yeah,
so that's why that's sort of those two shows. Westworld's still brilliant, but it didn't have the same spark that the first season had. So
yeah,
but that's it for TV. Movies was a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I also don't get to see as many movies as I used to. You know, top five movies for me this year, and coming up, while I don't see as many, coming up with this top five was a little harder. Like what order these movies would be in, especially the final three. Either all three of those could have been my favorite film of the year. As far as top five movies of the year,
that's kind of the way I am with movies. I'm like,
yeah,
I was trying to do this and I was like, there's so many movies that I saw where I was like, where do I rank them? And I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, for me, number five, it's gotta be Infinity War. I've watched this movie again and again since it came out.
Number five is Infinity War for you?
Yes, number five is Infinity War for me.
Interesting.
I've watched it again and again since it came out, and I love it. Even though I know exactly what's going to happen, I still like it every single time. So,
yeah.
You watched it too. I will say, as a movie going experience, that first time is unlike anything I have ever seen before.
Oh yeah, we've discussed this. It's, you know, the Thor's arrival and several other parts in that movie, especially the ending. Maybe it'll happen in Endgame, but I don't know. I've never experienced anything like that in a movie theater. Never. Not even a Star Wars movie. The shock that movie brought to that movie theater, that night at the movie theater, just...
Not since I was a little kid and watched Empire for the first time.
Yeah.
That is about is the next moment I could equate that to.
Yeah.
Was what happened in Infinity War. So that's number five. Number four for me, might be a surprise for some people know me, but number four for me is the documentary "Won't You Be My Neighbor" about Mr. Rogers.
Oh, the Mr. Rogers! I still haven't seen that. I need to see that.
It's an amazing story. It's hard to believe in this day and age that there was somebody like Mr. Rogers. The character you saw in the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood, that was a real person.
Mm-hmm.
That was him.
That wasn't
that
an actor.
Was him. That wasn't yeah. him. That was him. That wasn't an actor. And the documentary is amazing. It's I don't think during a documentary I ever cried so much at that. And especially, I mean, being a kid who actually grew up watching Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
It's a very amazing, moving documentary. And I believe it's actually coming to HBO on February 9th.
Oh, I'll have to watch it on that.
So it'll debut on HBO. Number three, now, like I said, one through three was very hard to decide which one is going to be number one. But number three for me is Mary Poppins Returns. I can't remember the last time, speaking of movie going experience, that I experienced so much joy watching a film.
Yeah.
I
think that was my review of it, was I just smiled so much. I've never smiled so much in a movie.
You know, were there some things that felt a little retread from the first movie? Yeah. But Emily Blunt, you know, within... You know, that first number, she made Mary Poppins her own. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't forget Julie Andrews, but she did an amazing job making Mary Poppins her own, capturing the vanity of Mary Poppins, you know, and the melancholy that Mary Poppins has, you know, that she knows when the problem's solved, she leaves.
Yeah,
you know, and
she did it in her own way too. She put her own little twist to it.
Yeah, I mean, and amazing musical numbers. Trip the Light Fantastic is just one of the most best musical numbers I feel I've seen in a musical in a long time.
That was Jordan, my 8-year-old. That was his favorite. He loved that whole scene.
Yeah, I mean that is amazing. I mean, just so much of that. Yeah, some people like dogged on Lin-Manuel Miranda's Cockney accent, but it's no better or worse than Dick Van Dyke's in the original movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Trip to Light, fantastic. Underneath the Lovely London Sky, it's almost most of the songs on there, were the Royal Dalton Music Hall. Can you imagine that? I mean, I love the song. And the best song for me in the movie was A Cover Is Not the Book. So many great songs, so many great sequences, just an excellent movie, one of the most joyous, fun times I've had at a movie in a long time. Let's counter that with one of the most dramatic times I've had at a movie in a long time. And my number two is A Star Is Born. Top to bottom, it's one of the best overall cinematic experiences I've seen in a long time. Just the way the movie was shot, the performances in the movie, obviously the music.
I'm a huge fan of Gaga, and I haven't seen it, so I'm kind of slacking in that department.
She's amazing in it. Obviously, she's playing a part that's very close to, her.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper did an amazing job directing it. His cinematographer did an amazing job shooting it, because the musical sequence is in the concerts in that are shot in a way I felt I've never seen in a movie before. So much of it is from the perspective of on the stage with the musicians, and not like literally like in their faces type of perspective. And rare, I don't even know if there's except for maybe a couple of shots of where they're shooting the action straight on from the audience's point of view.
Yeah.
It's all really in there, and it's amazing how they shot that. And of course it's a dramatic, heartbreaking story. But really just an amazing movie. And I believe that'll be out in video soon here. My number one movie of the year, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I was going to say, if that's not your number one, I've been sitting here trying to figure out which one is.
One of the most innovative mainstream animated movies in a long time. Not only did they manage to make Spider-Man fresh, I mean, we've had how many live-action Spider-Man movies? We've had countless animated Spider-Man TV series. They brought a fresh take on it, obviously using Miles Morales, but having Peter Parker in it. Just the way they did that whole movie, and it's just, having the, it's perfect. It is. I can't really think of a flaw in that movie. It's so well done, and so much love was put into that movie. The people who created that movie love comic books.
Yeah.
I mean, and just each time the origin, the way they did the whole origin thing each time is just, amazing. And then you get to that final moment where Miles steps up and boom, he gets his comic book cover.
Yeah.
It's such a great movie with such an impressive story and, amazing animation.
Yeah. I think that was one of the biggest things for me was the animation with the whole, comic book look to it and just everything.
How some of the shots in it, it would blur, almost like the way, the comic mm-hmm. book, some of the older comics books, the print would be, the printing would be slightly off.
Yeah. Yep.
just, you know, from the animation to the voice acting too. It was all top notch.
And we can't not mention the soundtrack too.
Yeah. I mean, all the different songs they used and the score itself too.
I listen to that religiously on Amazon Music.
I know this will be out by the time the Oscar nominations are revealed. It would be nice if it got nominated for a regular Best Picture Oscar. It better get nominated for Best Animated, and it should win. I mean, in a year where we had The Incredibles 2, it's the superior film. It's by far.
Oh, easily.
Way above any of the other animated films that came out this year.
Yeah, I'm definitely counting down the days to pick that up on 4K Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. I cannot wait to just dissect that movie over and over again and just watch it over and over again. So that's my top five. As far as like a couple honor mentions, obviously Black Panther. I mean, it's hard to believe that Black Panther did come. It's almost a year ago now that Black Panther came out. That's an amazing, really changed things and great story. One of the best Marvel villains they've created, MCU has had so far. I'm trying to think of what else would go into.
Throw one in there. Even though I didn't make a list. I think this probably would have been on my top five. And I don't think you saw it. A Quiet Place.
I did finally see that.
Did you?
There's another one that an innovative use of cinema and sound. To create a very unique story that I don't think we've seen anything like that before. So
yeah, I would definitely put that. I don't know if it'd be on my list, but I would definitely put it, if not in honorable mentions. It's a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, be sure to.
But yeah, that's my top TVs and movies of 2018. And good Lord, we got so much coming in 2019. Movies and television wise, with all the Avengers Endgame, Spider-Man Far From Home, Toy Story 4, some of the Disney stuff. On movie wise, of course, Star Wars. I know there's some people who are down on Star Wars, but screw you. I'll be enjoying Episode 9.
Yeah.
TV-wise, we got the final season of Game of Thrones coming out here. I mean, it's just so much stuff coming in 2019. So.
It's going to be a crazy year. Strap in.
And Disney streaming service launches at the end of this year, and we'll see what...
What
will be the launch series with that new service? So.
Cool. All right, let's wrap things up here. We went long, but we had a lot of catching up to do, so that's okay.
I will be off next week because I will be in Puerto Rico. Going to see. Speaking of Lin-Manuel Miranda, I'll be seeing him in Hamilton. So
yeah.
So I will be out of town, so we don't know yet what Clint will be doing. I'll bring Cheryl on again.
I'll have to figure something out. I'll figure that out. I'll figure it out.
But he'll figure it out. I'll be sunning myself in Puerto Rico. So we are at Thrill Geek on Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/ThrillGeek, where we do most of our live streams. And hey, you can check out a video of the gondolas testing. And that's on our Facebook page, facebook.com/ThrillGeek. Our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ThrillGeek. We have got a ton of new videos, including a bunch of Tokyo Disney videos. We got the Move It, Shake It, Mouse Dance at Party. We got Mickey and Minnie in their birthday outfits. We got a preview of the new Disney, Mickey Mix Magic something Nighttime Spectacular at Disneyland. We got even more Tokyo Disney videos coming. We'll have an Epcot Festival of the Arts video coming. So plenty constantly, we're going to have new content on the YouTube channel every single week. Remember, for the latest in theme park and pop culture news, visit thrillgeek.com. And you're listening to the Thrill Geek Podcast.
Available
wherever podcasts are sold.
So I'll figure out what's going on next week as far as an episode. Coming up, like I said, we got Mardi Gras. We got we'll do some more Festival of the Arts stuff coming up here, and
we've got Barry. Will Barry continue to be depressed about being home from Tokyo, even though it's been a month?
I don't think you're ever gonna get over that. So thanks again for listening. We went a little bit long, almost an hour and a half, but hey, we had lots of stuff to talk about, so we're sort of maybe all cut up now. So thanks guys for listening, and we'll see you guys again next week. Maybe
see you in the parks. Oh, and jaw dropping.